December 14, 2022, it's a Watt for Pedro show.
This is Giant Steps Day 8.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday. Starting off the show, John Coltrane doing Giant Steps, the alternate take. Actually, take eight, way down the road there. Dreadful in the Den after that's so tough, live. And because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me. Brother Dreadful, welcome aboard.
Ah, nice to see you, Mike.
Well, kind of see. It's audio only. Yeah, it's all audio only, but
beautiful.
It cuts down on the dropouts. I'm not trying to hide from you, Brother Dread. We got to thank Bill Nash for the connect.
Yeah, Bill, love Bill.
And what town, Brother Dread, what town are you talking to me from?
I'm talking to you from Brattleboro, Vermont.
Brattleboro?
Yep.
Yeah, all right. Ain't played there yet, but one day, one way.
Yeah, there's not a lot of places to play, especially nowadays.
Last spring I played Burlington.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was called Monkey Room or something. It was something downtown. It was a good gig. We had a good time.
Uh-huh.
MSSV. Going to be out, by the way, Mike Baghetta is booking next tour, which is going to be a year from now. Well, it'll start September 5, actually 10 months. It's going to be 61 gigs and two loops. Wow. We're going to do an I-5 loop and then the rest country loop. We'll just wait for the Rockies. Anyway, enough about me. Brother Dread, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Okay, my earliest musical recollection would be connected to my mom. She sort of she was the one who gave me the intense love of music, I think. When I was very, very young, we had a little 45 RPM record player. This was in the 50s. My mom had a pile of records of all seven.
Pile inches. Them up!
Yes. And you know, but she wasn't. It wasn't rock and roll for her yet. She was really into dance bands and stuff, and she loved to dance. And so a lot of these records were, you know, like Les Elgar, Larry Elgar, I don't know. And there's some cardboard EPs that were, you know, beautiful picture sleeves. Pretty cool. But I was really into it. I would sit on the floor with it and play them one after the other, and thought they were very cool.
Now, this pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments besides playing the record player? Did you play anything else?
I didn't. My mom played piano.
Did you ever jump on that piano?
What's that?
Did you ever jump on that piano?
No, I messed with it a little bit. She
did
tried
you have to? Yeah, I'm going to ask you about the piano lesson experience, because I've had people on this show as guests that almost quit music because of that experience.
Right. She didn't do that to me. She did it to my sister. I did not have to play the piano.
Mercy.
I wish I had now.
I know. Well, everybody says that, but in the moment, I think it depends on the teacher's technique or lack of.
Right. She was pretty straightforward. She was very cool. She was really into, like, rhythm and, well, like I said, dancing and stuff. Actually, I had a cousin who was in a dance band who played saxophone. And we'd go over to their place and she would jam with them. And they came to our house a couple times and rehearsed in the basement. And, I was pretty impressed with that too.
Wow, your pad was like a prac pad. Let me ask you this. At school, marching band, choir, were you in shit like that?
No.
Okay. What about the first record you bought with your own money there, Brother Dredd?
It was the Battle of New Orleans by Johnny Horton.
Oh, I remember that.
Hi,
hi, yippee, 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 hi, hey.
That's it.
kind of a history lesson. D. Boone was into that, too.
Yeah.
Now, what was the first gig you saw?
The first gig I saw.
Where's that going here?
I was like, I think it was my 14th birthday. I was a huge James Brown fan. And for my 14th birthday, my mom took me to, there was a supper club somewhere near us where, you know, you go in, you sit down, have dinner, and then you have a show. Well, we went to see James Brown. And this was like 64. And he was just astounding. I still have yet to see
That's Famous Flames days.
No, it was the JB's, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, JB's. So did you see Bootsy?
I guess. I mean, I had no
idea.
Probably
saw Catfish for sure, his brother on rhythm guitar.
Right.
Now, when we were 14, me and D Boom were 14, we saw our first gig. It was T-Rex.
Wow.
1973 at the Long Beach Auditorium. Everybody says that. Everybody says, wow, you know. Because I got to tell you, they weren't that big.
Uh-huh. Right.
But looking back, oh, man, Mark Bolan's hugest. But they were huge in England and stuff. But U.S., only Bangin' Gong. Okay, so what about the after school, not graduating, but in the afternoon? Did you get into the bedroom band, basement band, garage band thing?
I was in bands in high school.
I asked you about that. Oh, just not the marching band.
I'm talking about, now we're talking about rock bands now, right?
You mean you had rock band classes?
No.
You're talking about friends at school.
Friends at school, yeah. I was not involved in anything in school. I was not an athlete by a long shot.
You don't have to be an athlete. Well, maybe you do, especially if it's a Wynwood. Like, I'm trying to learn this baritone horn I got in the 80s on tour. Finally, I'm trying to learn it 40 years later. And, man, a lot of head rushes with them Wynwoods. You don't worry about that with the bass guitar. It's more about getting calluses on the finger. So you found some buddies at school, and then after school, in the afternoon, you guys got together and made some bands.
Yes, I was in a few bands back in the...
Tell me about the first one.
Tell you about it? It was called The Colonials. It was like four guitar players, a piano player, and a drummer, and I was the lead singer.
Whoa.
I never played anything in these bands. I was just the singer. I always wanted, my dream ever since I was a little kid was to be a lead singer.
Yeah. And
so that's what I did.
Well, it's like that when you saw Jim Brown, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Can't stand it.
He was like,
Love the man. I remember when Say It Loud and Black and Proud came out, I was in Navy House. I just moved to Pedro here from Virginia. And big birthday party at one of our buddy's pads, you know, because all our pops were in Vietnam, right? They're sailors. And what a groove. That's groove. So your lead singer, The Colonials. Now, what kind of material did Colonials play?
We mostly played All Stones and Birds.
You're copying songs off records like me and D.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We sort of headed, towards the end of it, we sort of started trying to write stuff.
Tell me about did Colonials ever do a gig?
Oh, yeah.
First Colonials gig.
The first gig was in a place called the Morristown Grange. And
let me tell the listeners, granges were like unions for farmers, so it's like a union hall.
And it was their hall, and I don't know how we got into it. Some friend of ours was connected to the group that was using it for some event, I don't know, and he got us in there, and it was, and sort of interestingly with what I've done since then, we actually didn't really rehearse very much. They had played together a bunch, and I had sort of said, they said they were looking for a lead singer, and I said, oh, yeah, I do that. And so I knew all the songs. So we went in, and we played this show. I'm sure it must have been horrible. It just must have been horrible.
But in your mind, do you think it was a success? Because this is the first time you worked a room, right?
Right. It was the first time. Well, I don't think I was totally blown by it. It was like, it was too messy.
But they didn't throw shit, and you didn't get lynched.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's a success. Look, you gave me this tune, Not the Same. Some more live Dread Fool in the Ditch.
This is Not the Same. We'll be right back. I want mashed pancakes with petroleum jelly and goober peas and sweetie peas.
see. I do believe the temperature in the WERS studios has gone up about 50 degrees. Big thanks to Dreadful and the Din for coming down and making this Sunday not just another performance, but an event.
Chuck, the music started off with Dreadful and the Din. Not the same. After that, my buddy Spot in Spoygen. I think this is recorded during his stay in Austin. Over the Waterfall, Blind Man's Dance. He can play. He calls it the fedola. You know, it's a viola, but you play it on the arm. So, yeah, fedola. Okay. Hidden Forces Trio from Spain with Raul Cantizano. And it features Watt. They had Watt do some spiel over their tune here. We Who Sold Our Soul for Nothing. They even wrote the spiel for me. Raul, pretty good with the Engle. Orthodox, this is the bass man, Marco Serraro, great bass man for Hidden Forces Trio. He's got his own band called Orthodox, brand new. Rabid God is his tune. Rob Dobbinspeck after that with Redonkulous, little pun rock there. Weird Nightmare, brand new. Thank you, Mr. Dave Newgarden. So Far Gone. I remember when he used to manage just one dude, Mr. Pollard. Now he's got a little stable. Horace Andy after that, half of Baltimore's Mold Omen with My Guiding Star. Checking out guitar after what I've heard is a lifetime of keyboard. Muskeg Mudsuck. This is brand new from Anchorage, Alaska. Much respect. Dreadful in the Din, finally. Some more live. I got a right. Right? Way I choose. Okay, Brother Dread, let's pick up. What happens with the Colonials?
They ended up breaking up. We had a piano player, and he could only play, you know, he didn't have an electric piano, so we had to play somewhere where there was a piano. So he had to go.
Yeah, I got. Let me tell the listeners, people, in the 70s, you don't know how much a fucking electric keyboard cost. Like, me and D. Boone didn't know one fucker, and Pedro played them. They cost, you know, you could get a Tasco or Melody Plus at the pawn shop guitar, you know, for $15, but... It wasn't that way with keyboards, man. That was a whole different thing. I remember the Univox was the first one, and it could do clavinet, harpsichord, or piano. I mean, the organ thing even took a while, let alone synthesizer. We got to thank the Casio, whoever that was, Roland or something, because that made things econo and approachable. Okay, right. So the piano player leads to the demise of the Colonials. So where do you go musically after that?
A new band, same drummer and I stayed together, and we got, and one of the guitar players stayed, and we got a new guitar player who was quite good. And that was the Nobles.
And what was the first Noble gig like?
The first Noble gig was, it was a gig in a hall that we played with a bunch of other bands, totally like, strangers. I had no idea who was there. There was a lot of people there. They were kind of into what we were doing. But in those days, you could almost play anything.
What kind of material? Did Nobles do covers like Colonials?
Yep, same. Okay. Stones, Birds.
Sure. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
But not your stuff. Because you're still working on that, right? You said you were trying to with Colonials. So what happens, and was that gig, even though it's a bunch playing for a bunch of strangers, which is like fucking life on tour, right? Was it a success?
Yeah, kind of. Not really. We weren't that good. I mean, we just weren't good. And
sometimes anyway, it can be a success, and you're not that good. That's what I learned. Yeah. Let the gig goers get to decide. So if they didn't throw shit, you didn't get lynched, maybe it was a success.
Well, then it was a success.
Okay.
But in minor, I mean, it wasn't in my mind.
Now, how long did the Nobles go? What happened to them?
They went for a while, and then they broke up completely. It was like we weren't getting along, especially one of the guitar players was being very obstinate.
Was it the guy that was good?
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, see, that's a problem sometimes. Now, what happens to you musically, Brother Dredd, after the Nobles?
And then, finally, the Notions. It was the last band I was in high school.
Okay.
And
what are Notions like? What's the difference? Same drummer?
Same drummer.
Yes.
One of the guitar players, and then a new guitar player who was really something. He was a hot shot. He was older than we were. He had pretty long hair, and in those days, that was not good in the town. I mean, I grew up in this small conservative town.
Right. They probably all got long hair now, but still wear Nazi
armbands. Yeah, exactly. But he joined the band, and he was kind of he was a known sort of bad guy in the town. He had like been left back a couple times in school, which was something they don't do anymore either.
Okay,
but he was like, you know, kept back twice, I think, in school, and then he quit school.
And what was the first Notions gig like?
The only gig we ended up playing, oh no, there were two, but the big gig was we played a talent show at the high school.
Okay.
With a bunch of other bands.
Now, this is in front of your peers.
In front of our peers. And
those are sometimes the biggest pants shitters I've found.
Yes, exactly. But, and actually, to answer your next question, it was successful. I was doing, at that point, I was like doing splits on stage and stuff like that. And people got into that. And so we got,
Why did it only last two gigs?
Because the new guitar player was sort of undependable, and he ended up like splitting and going to California. He actually ended up in the Hells Angels. I saw him years later, and he came back, and he was like, in the club, and that's where he went. And from there, I don't know. That was the
last time. You're done with high school. So when do you do? What's the next music? Do you take music in college and stuff like this?
I didn't take music, no, but I had a girlfriend, the woman that I was hanging around with, was a musician. She played mostly piano, and she started teaching piano stuff, and then she got a guitar and figured that out, and then she taught me the guitar, and that's kind of where that ended up. So I started playing guitar, which I could use to write with.
Okay. Because before that, now you're really getting into the songwriting, right? Because you got some music to go with the words. Okay.
I'm trying.
But we got to give this lady some credit. What's her name?
Lisa.
Okay, thank you, Lisa, for fucking getting Brother Dread going on his own thing.
She did. I ended up spending a lot of time, just banging away at the guitar.
So what, do you end up like singer-songwriter?
Well, not right away. No, actually, we used to like throw bands together.
So, like, you guys would be the core, her on piano and you on guitar.
No, she never played with us. Actually, there were these other people who had. There were all kinds of little bands around. I mean, everybody was trying to be in a band and everybody was playing. So we would get together for a party or just before the afternoon and play. I remember snowstorms. We would drag the equipment down and, hang in the house and play music all day. And people would come by and they would dance. And, it was the 60s.
That's great. You let the freak flag fly.
Yeah. It was fun, but I wasn't very good.
It don't matter. You're the soundtrack to their lives at that moment there, Brother Dread. Okay.
Yeah, so that was...
Now, let me ask you this. Did you have a tape recorder? Were you recording some of your own compositions at this time?
No.
No.
We had no tape recorder.
So when you came up with a song, like, if you either remembered it or it was fucking gone.
Yes, exactly.
I went through that stage. And those babies are gone. Hasta la vista. No fucking hasta la vista. Just feet.
You always think you're going to remember them.
Yeah. Right. The shadow or whatever. The dust was left from that fucking thing.
Flies in the air.
So what's the next sea change in music for you, Brother Dre?
Well, the next thing is I ended up moving to the Boston area. To for another young lady named Pat, who you're vaguely familiar with.
A little bit.
And
now, people, I got to tell the listeners, White got a little confused with some identity issues. But I'm learning. I'm a slow learner, but, you know, I ain't impossible. So much apologies, Brother Dan, Sister fucking.
No apologies.
Yeah, Pat.
But anyway, I moved up here, and we I started.
Oh, shit. You know what? You know, before you get going on this, Brother Dan, I got to tell you, we're at the end of the first hour of the 7/14/2022 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Special guest, Dread Fool. Hold tight for hour two. December 14, 2022. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. they seem, but they can hurt you. Go back to sleep. Tomorrow is another day. Never mind what they say. Don't feel guilty.
Reach! Come on!
For Pedro Show, start off the second hour. Dreadful in the Den, the Paralyzed. Then, from the Almighty Op, without his puppets, but you got his sound. We Don't Have to Like Them. SLW and Bob Buckle Jr. out of Iowa with Something Special. Gabby Don, it's got the bass player from the old middle class for Orange County, Mike Patton. Not that Mike Patton, but the one I had to go way back. In fact, he produced about 15 Minutemen songs. They're like on Joy EP, Politics Time, Bean Spill EP. He's living in Athens, Georgia now. He's got a new project called Gebedon. But he used to be with three Atta brothers in middle class. Used to see him with the Germs and stuff. Great man. Great man. Mike Patton, great cat. And then finally, Dread Fool. That's when I reached for my revolver. And I recognize this title, speaking of Boston. And I remember first playing the Channel Club with Husker Du, and who shows up at the gig? Brother Roger Miller.
So we were there, too.
You were there, too. Okay. Because yeah. Channel only let punk bands people play on Sunday afternoons because they would have a heavy metal band play at nighttime. And this was Sundays only. And so there was weird laws. New Hampshire was making all the money on beer. But Andrew there, so Southie Andrew, he would make sure that you got some beers when you were done. I think the place ends up burning down later, mysteriously. Not.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Yeah. But and Husker Du and Gang Green opened up the show. They only got one song out. They had a big Budweiser banner behind them, and Mr. Dougherty lost to Budweiser because one tune he was Baracho and on the deck puking. Okay, continue. So you moved to Boston now, and you're doing music. How?
It's just playing in my apartment, playing solo. I got an electric.
Now I got to say, Boston's not a little town. There's billions of bands, buttloads of clubs, all kinds of shit happening, right?
Oh, yeah. But I took a while to get there. I mean, it was like I started to get an idea something was going on. I remember reading an article in the Boston Phoenix, which was a weekly entertainment.
Yeah, I remember the Phoenix, yep.
Yeah, and about Willie Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
Mass Ave and Kerouac as a single, and I was really intrigued. I had no idea that people did their own singles and stuff.
Yeah, that's the same thing with us. Because I got to tell the listeners, coming from Arena Rock, there was a whole club thing and little label shit in the 60s I learned from Help the Stooges 125 months. But you got to understand, people, for me and Brother Dredd, we're in this area where, like, clubs, it was just Arena Rock, so we didn't know about this kind of culture. Go on.
Especially before, this is like...
Yeah, because Willie Alexander's kind of in between. He's kind of straddling the world.
Yeah, yeah. He was, well, he started, he was in the Lost in the 60s, which was sort of Boston's, by reputation, I never saw them, Boston's Rolling Stones compared to the remaining...
Oh, there was buttloads of garage bands. There was even a band called the Minutemen in Boston. I mean, the 60s...
Really?
There was huge... Yeah, there was a huge indie scene in the 60s. It just got all forgot with the Arena Rock, Nuremberg rally shit of the 70s, yeah.
But Willie sort of kept it going through... Right. I mean, I think it was him who really kept the scene together and...
There was also a violin player, John Liberty Valance, who shot Valley. He did a thing. There was a couple dudes in Boston like that, kind of straddling both worlds. Yeah.
There was Third Rail. There was
DMZ, Scruffy the Cat.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, this is before that. Before
I know, but there's like kind of an interim period.
Yeah. Yeah, and Boston, there wasn't a lot of places to play, but they kept finding places. And, of course, the Rat was, like, the big thing to start with. I mean, he'd let people come in and play that, you know, weren't playing radio songs. And that was a big deal, as you know, in those days. I mean, most clubs, you had to play, you know, popular stuff from the radio.
We're the top 40.
Right.
And basically, it's karaoke machine shit. You know, it's ridiculous. Look, you gave me this song, To the Siren. This is dreadful, but without the din, people.
From the sorrow. Yeah.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Dreadful. It says live, so
maybe
you by yourself. Song to the Siren. We're trying to evaluate because obviously Brother Dread didn't send me his own music. Somebody, it was one of those other identities, Pat or Dan or.
Oops.
You know, hammered holes after that. We had Alec McKay on a couple of weeks ago, and Sounding of the Sea, Mark Cisneros, and everything else. Mike Molnar, Fooler's Moon, Ray Shin out of Reno with Dead Incorporated, and finally, Turn, 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 Dreadful. I'm thinking Turtles, people. Flo and Eddie. Okay, go on, go on. So you're checking out this emerging fucking club scene in Boston.
Yeah. And I got Willie's single. I used to read Rock Scene magazine. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I remember.
So I was aware of all the New York bands, although I didn't, we didn't hear them or anything. They didn't have records at the time. And then Television put out that 7-inch, Little Johnny Jewel.
Yeah, I remember that. Two parts, A side, B side.
And they came and played in Boston, in this huge, used to be a car dealership, I think, and they emptied it out. It was this huge empty warehouse, and the sound was awful.
Like a roller rink.
Oh, man, yeah, it was terrible. But anyway, opening for them was Nikki Clean in the Mez, which is another
one. Nikki Clean, okay.
And Willie Alexander joined them for a couple songs.
Sure, okay.
And that was the first time I saw him, and he was just, like, brilliant.
Yeah, he's buddy.
So he was brilliant. I couldn't hear the vocals, but the guitar work was obviously great.
You got to think in your mind, Patti Smith.
I think that was
his girlfriend at the time.
Right.
It was right after Al Lanier. I don't know if you were in the Blow Oyster Cult. Okay, yeah. So what do you do musically? Are you inspired by this, seeing all this, hearing all this?
Oh, yeah, definitely inspired. We started to get involved. We were going to all the clubs. Used to see the Real Kids a lot in a place called Cantones, with a tiny little restaurant place. They would play every Saturday night, and all the girls from the North Shore would come down and dance and go crazy, and it was pretty nuts. Stuff like that before, and then the punk. Oh, and there was a huge to us. It was we got to see the first Boston Rock and Roll contest. I don't forget what they called it, but. And it was all a lot of the bands that had been going up until that point, like In Between the Cracks, and then there was a couple new bands. But it was, Willie Alexander ended up winning that, the Battle of the Bands, and saw the Inflictors and Baby's Arm, and I don't know. There was all kinds.
Well, what do you do musically?
Well, I'm still
Man Alone.
I'm still playing alone and running into people, and then I started doing tapes. I guess that's the next.
So you do get a recorder, okay?
Yeah, I got a Sony tape deck, and I started taping stuff. And I had a guy that we knew who was writing for Boston Rock, and he did a column, and I sent him a tape, and he totally went crazy. He thought it was. It was really wild, really weird, of course, and so he put together it was a birthday present for me. He took me into the studio with Mr. Burma. Mr. Burma were friends of ours. We had actually met Clint and Roger when they were in an earlier band, and so when they started, we started going to see them, and we were really into them. But they were great. And he got them to come in the studio with me for this birthday present. And we recorded 5 songs.
Whoa. And that's a great fucking present.
It's a great present.
Yeah.
And the thing is that they had no idea. They didn't even know I was playing music. And they never heard any of the songs. And they didn't even know what I could do or couldn't do. And we just went in and I sort of showed them the basic structure, and then we just went and we recorded like the first take every time but once, I think. And it came out quite good. And that's where the first single was taken from, So Tough and Sanctuary.
Okay.
The 7-inch on Religious Records was taken from that session.
Whoa. Okay. And what year was this?
February of 82.
Wow. Something else. Look, I got to cut you off, Brother Dre, because we're at the end of the second hour of the December 14, 2022 edition of the Watt for Pedro Show with special guest Dread Fool. Hold tight for hour three. December 14, 2022, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro's show start off the third hour with Dread Fool and Freedom. Then we had If Bawana, Brother Al Margolis out of Chester, New York, with the Norton Variations number 2 for alto saxophone and contra alto clarinet. And finally, Dread Fool in the Din, Ghost Rider. Okay, what happens after that first single comes up?
First single came out, and I was doing, actually working at a record store with a guy who had a band called Way Out West, and they would play a set, and then I would come out and play 3 songs with them, and we would do 2 songs from the single and I Want to Be Your Dog.
Stooges.
And I did that for a while, and it worked for them because the single was actually kind of big on the Boston radio, or, you know, the local college stations. So it brought people in for them. And then to one of those shows, I think it was Roger and Clint showed up, and they saw the show, and they decided that they wanted to be part of it.
All right.
So the Din got together and was joined. And we, Gerard Cosloy was putting on a benefit for the Neats. Their house had burned down.
Oh.
And, it started out, it was going to be an all day hardcore show or something. And then this Neats house burned down and he decided to do this benefit. And he asked us if we would do it. So we all said yes, absolutely. So we pulled out with our first gig. The only gig I ever played with just that lineup was the 4 guys from Burma and me.
And that was a benefit that Gerard Cosloy put on. He's the boss of Homestead, put out the first Dinosaur record. Look, you know, at the beginning of the show I said, we got to give credit to Bill Nace. You gave me this I got this piece of music with Bill Nace and you playing together with a cat named Steve Bukowski, Chris Corsano, the drummer man, he's been on this show, beautiful cat, and Paul Flaherty. Now, what's your connect with Bill Nace? How did you meet this man?
I met Bill through Chris, actually. Chris is an old friend.
Incredible drummer man.
Beautiful. We go way back. He was
beautiful spirit, too.
What's that?
Beautiful spirit. I just love talking with that man.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the great human beings.
Yeah, where's he at? Ithaca, right? Ithaca?
Yeah, he's living in Ithaca. And, man, there's not a better percussionist around, I don't think. He's amazing.
He really is. He really is, people. He's beautiful.
But anyway, he and I were friends, and he actually helped me record my first record for Ecstatic Yod. And
Byron Coley, people.
Byron Coley, people. And so anyway, through him I met Bill, and those guys, Bill and he and Steve Trusinski, who actually also recorded that first record, they worked out this Suicide thing. They do it for Halloween. We were going to do Suicide.
We're talking about the band, people.
Yeah.
Alan Vega, Martin Rev. We're not talking about the Verb.
No. Right. We're talking about the band, folks.
But look, let I want to play this piece so people know what's going on, and then we'll talk more. Okay.
Time to go, but I don't know why. magic notes are flowing and your floppy boots are showing. Why does it always have to end? Once I loved a girl, and once I loved a song, once I dreamed I dreamed. Got the squares to fight us, and there are no more pictures to talk on. And I wish we could get higher, but the still has caught on fire. Time that we moved on to the next song. Once I loved a girl, and once I.
time is gone. Well, Judy never asked it. No, cause Judy was a baddest. Lived on the roughest side of the town. Yeah, Judy was a baddest. Could have been any better than this town. Yeah, Judy. Yeah, Judy was one hell of a motherfucking baddie.
Watt for Pedro. Last music for this edition. Started that chunk off. Dreadfool and Bed Chasney with Four Roses for Jack. I guess instead of a... Yeah, because it's got to come from Kentucky to be bourbon, right? So sip a Tennessee whiskey. Yeah. Tim Wholehouse after that with Judy. And then, like I was saying before, Dreadfool with Steve Bukowski, Chris Cusano, Paul Flaherty, Bill Nace. And I guess these are area codes, maybe? 413-860-716. Name of the tune.
Yep.
Enlighten us, please, Brother Dredd.
About this record?
Whatever you like to. Well, that piece of music, yeah, because this has got to connect with Bill Nace. So you end up playing with the guy.
Chris and Bill and Steve Trusinski worked out this thing using just basses and bass drums and bass guitars. We did Suicide that way. I just sang and they did that. And that was eventually put out by Feeding Tube, actually.
He's got a partner, too, named Ted, right?
Oh, yeah, Ted Lee. You mean Byron?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ted Lee. Because
you said Feeding Tube.
Yeah, Feeding Tube. Ted Lee and Byron Coley.
Yeah, the Spielgusher album they put out. They put out the vinyl version.
Uh-huh.
Good cats. Pettibone artwork. Okay. Tell me about this Ben Chasney.
Okay, Ben is Six Organs of Admittance, as most folks would know.
He
and I had talked about doing something together for years, and we finally got together and spent one day in the studio and pretty much did everything in a first take again. I mean, that's kind of how I work.
What are you doing right now?
Right now, I'm just playing in the house.
You got no recording projects lined up? You got no gigs lined up?
No gigs, no recording. The big thing I'm working on now is this Corbett versus Dempsey series of Dreadfool in the Din, which is it's going to be four releases. The first one's out. Some of the stuff is on your list there. The first one is 82, and then there's 83, and then there's 85, 86, I think. And then there's going to be – the fourth one's going to be in between, like, the transition from my rock years to what I did later, which is more experimental and more weird and non-rock. So there you go.
That's where you are right now.
That's where I am right now. I haven't been playing out. Because of the pandemic.
Right. Everything, on hold for the situation. And 30 years, that's quite a gap. But you say that you're going to put out some stuff that kind of tells about that gap?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all the stuff that the band, there were two basic Dreadfool in the Dins. One was the Mission of Burma.
Right.
And then the second one was, and then Kenny Chambers from Moving Targets joined that band. And then... when Mission of Burma broke up, we still played together a few times. But then Peter wanted to keep doing it, and he said, how about – and he had formed the Volcano Sons, and he said, well, how about we use the Volcano Sons? And so we did. That became
the
band.
But there was many versions of the Volcano Sons.
Oh, this was the first – no, actually the second one. I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, because he went through like three or four – I mean, like completely different guitar and drummers and – I mean, not drummers, bass players. Bob Weston was one for a while.
Bob Weston was one. I did one gig with Bob Weston as the part
I think
of the
they, maybe Bob Fay was one. I mean, there was a lot of cats who went through the Volcano Sons.
No, not Bob Fay.
Who am I thinking of? What are those cats?
Well, I'm trying to think. The original one was Steve Michener and Gary Wachek or something, who ended up in a Big Dipper.
Oh, that's right. Well, it's hard. My memory's terrible. Brother Dredd, don't count on Watt's memory. It's terrible. So what you're doing right now is mainly Man Alone stuff, composing and recording?
I haven't been composing or recording at all lately.
No, but that plan is to pick up on this. What's it called? The Dempsey series?
Corbett versus Dempsey. It's a Chicago label. Okay. They mostly release rare and impossible to find rare jazz records. And they took this. They took us on to do this one.
I'll tell you a rare. I wish a jazz recording. I wish they'd find is fucking Wes Montgomery with John Coltrane at the Monterey Jazz Festival. No one has recorded that motherfucker. He asked him to join the band. He said, "No, your music's too far out." But anyway, I'm really curious. I can't wait. No, because nobody knows about if there ever was a recording made. But that's one of the most desirable ones that there was.
Wow.
But what I'm going to ask you is, will you please come on the show when you get this next thing released so we can play it and talk about it? Because I'm curious as hell. I want to hear it.
Well, you've heard some of it.
Okay.
Some of those songs on your list there are from the original one.
Okay, yeah, but I want to hear the contemporary stuff too when you get it done, okay? So this is what I'm giving you right here, Brother Dredd, is an invite for another appearance on Watt Pedro Show.
Wow, I will definitely do that.
Big love, big love. Thank you so much. Also the fucking
your
helper people, Dan and Pat. People, it's been the December 14, 2022, Dishwat Pedro, so keep your powder dry.